You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, everyone. Today we're getting the opportunity to speak with Shannon McLay. She is the founder of Financial Gym. And what's interesting about this, there's twofold. One of my personal passions is kind of looking at that intersection between fitness and finance, which I think there are so many comparisons to be made. You better believe we're going to actually take a look at some of that today, but also talking about how Shannon really bootstrapped a new model for the financial coaching industry. While working in the banking sector, she realized there's this huge gap of individuals that really, they need this help the most, but due to their actual net worth or lack thereof, they're not getting any attention. She said, what would it look like to fix that? With her own skill set and training, she left the corporate career with one of the largest banks in the country and went out and figured out what would it look like if it were perfect. The result of that product is the Financial Gym. With four physical locations and financial trainers across the country, she is out to change the coaching industry and make it more accessible for everybody. I'm really excited to both talk about her personal journey, her personal money story, the evolution of this business, but also find out what does it mean in current times when you have an in-person business that is, you know, reeling with everything that's going on in the current pandemic. I think your client's financial situation is probably more fragile than ever. And then you as a business are having to make pivots in a way that maybe you have never experienced before. I think this is gonna be a fascinating conversation. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. And yeah, Shannon's story has a little bit of everything. Like you said, she left the significant world of finance because it just didn't work for the people that she wanted to help. And to found her own company, this Financial Gym, where, as I've heard her say it, she helps people get financially fit at the Financial Gym. Like you said, that it is just such a cool thing. And as we always talk about, there is such an intersection between health and finance and life optimization as it is. So I love that concept. So Shannon, with that, welcome to Choose FI.
Oh, so excited to be here, guys. Love that you love our concept. I can't wait to talk about the intersection. I get told all the time I have so many analogies around fitness and money. So hold on tight because we got a lot.
Let me tell you what. So I was actually, this is for you and for our audience. I was undergoing a health transformation. I'm sure, I believe part of your story is that you had a pretty significant health transformation following the birth of your son. So we can compare notes there. But I'm actually documenting this on the YouTube channel as I kind of make this goal to lose about 30 to 35 pounds over the next 6 months. I'm 17 pounds down, by the way, for everybody when you're listening to this.
Yeah, congrats.
Making good progress. More on that later. But one of the comments I immediately got is on the YouTube channel, I thought this was about finance. What does finance have to do with fitness? And so Shannon, let's give that one to you. Just take it and run.
I mean, it has so much to do with it. And I can't even tell you how many times I've heard from people who've said, I don't understand money. I don't get money. I don't understand it. But they get a physical health journey. Most people get a physical health journey. Even if we're not physically fit, we know what physical fitness looks like. We know if we're not it. There's all these metrics that we can use to achieve it. There's so many resources we can go to get physically healthy. But when I had the idea for the gym and I was on my own physical health weight loss journey, I lost over 50 pounds with Weight Watchers and working out. And I remember thinking, what's the option for people to get financially healthy? And it didn't exist 7 years ago, and now it does. But there's so many different takes on it that we take. I mean, from debt repayment, right? If you have student loan debt or mortgage debt, some kind of significant debt, that's like a marathon training, right? You're not going to run 20 plus miles overnight if you decide to train for a marathon. You're going to do it over time. You're going to have a plan. You're going to work up to it. You're going to have setbacks. You're going to have rest times. I mean, it's going to be a long journey. To people who are doing really well, a lot of people who are financially independent and doing really well, maybe you need to like muscle up and build up some more and tone up some more and invest your money more, maybe take some more risks and level up your game. There's so many different ways to look at it.
Shannon, one of the things that I always look at when it comes to both physical fitness and finance is short-term versus long-term, mm-hmm. right? So many people look at, oh, I'm going to go on a diet or, yeah. oh, I'm going to put myself on a budget for the next month or two. And I think to me, that sets you up mentally for failure because you're thinking about it as short-term, as something that will come to an end. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I always say budgets are like diets. No one wants to be on one. Right. And both are not really successful at the end of the day. I mean, we have our clients on budgets, but we don't call them that because it's the same thing as a diet. And we joke, you know, you could go on the keto diet or, you know, cut carbs from your life. But if you're only going to do that for a few months and then load up on carbs the second you get off of it, then it's not a lifestyle change. And we're all about making lifestyle changes that are going to be consistent and you're going to be able to keep over time. So we're not going to tell you stop spending your money, like go on a no spend life, you know, or take all this out of your life because that's not sustainable. That's not going to be a health journey you want to go on. We want it to be something you're going to do the rest of your life.
Yeah. And I'm sure we will weave fitness metaphors into this entire episode, so we don't need to burn through all of them right now. But one of the, but I would be very interested, since you have built your brand around this idea, making these comparisons, the financial gym, your coaches or trainers. I mean, there's a lot of overlap there. For me personally, when I'm dealing with a diet, when I'm dealing with a health challenge, it's very easy for me to identify for myself that I have lots of discipline personally. Mm-hmm. I have no self-control. That's an internal language that I've come to understand about myself, my triggers, my routines, when I crash and burn, when I make decisions that aren't in the best interest of my long-term goals. And while I'm sure everybody is different, we know that not everybody would identify with that statement. I think there's something to be said for building guardrails around yourself to make sure mm-hmm. that you hit, you know, whatever goals that you set. And since I know that Financial Gym advertises that they help their clients say that they meet, and you can give me the language here to make sure I get this right, 90% of the goals that your clients set for themselves, they hit. What is the method?
Within a year.
Within a year. Now, mm-hmm. clearly someone says, you know, hey, I want to be financially independent in 1 year. You know, like, oh, well, we got a little work to do.
That's not a realistic goal. Like, I wanted to lose 50 pounds in a week, right? I mean, that's not realistic.
So how does the client's goals, what's the methodology for helping a client realize what is a realistic goal? And then being able to confidently say at the end of that, 90% of your clients hit their goals. When we know for weight loss that the vast majority of people trying to do this on their own have to attempt it almost 6 times before they actually are able to get, you know, to the health goal that they have set for themselves.
So when we set goals for our clients and we do it day one with them, we ask them what they want to achieve in the next 1 to 3 year goals, 3 to 5 year. And what's really interesting about the process is that most people don't know what they can accomplish as far as financial goals. But a lot of times we hear, I don't know what I can do. Like, I'm not really sure what goals I can set because maybe they're living paycheck to paycheck. Maybe they've never really achieved something strong financially, so they're not sure. And what we say is, if money wasn't a factor, what would it look and feel like for you? Something that would feel successful. Is it $10,000 in your emergency fund? Is it $1,000 in your emergency fund? What feels successful for you that you would feel like this is something that I can do? And then to start working toward it. And I always say, just going back to the marathon training, you're not going to hit those big goals right away. It's going to take some time to work up to it. And what's interesting is we'll start on day one. And at month three, we do our first big check-in. And at month three, probably only 50% of our clients are hitting their goals and 50% aren't. And at first, it sounds like that's a really bad track record. And I always say, that's because half the people just needed to know what to do and they were going to do it and they're set. The other half have never really gone on a financial health journey before. So maybe they thought they could do some things. We gave them some goals. They couldn't do it, but we track all their expenses. And after 3 months, we really know what's going on. Like day one, they're telling us what they think is happening with their finances. By month three, we know exactly what's going on. And then we can really tailor our approach to what's going to be successful for them. We're going to really know what their hot button issues are. You know, why did they spend $200 on Amazon when they said they weren't going to spend $200 on Amazon? Like you're saying, you know, Jonathan, that you figured yourself out, like, you know, this about yourself. A lot of our clients don't, when they're starting with us, they haven't identified these money behaviors. And that's part of the first 3 months is kind of discovering those. And then by month six, 70% of our clients are hitting that. And then by 9 months to a year, it's 100% because we're constantly figuring out what's going to work. So for some clients, it could be that they just need more positivity. Some clients, they might need to get a new job. Like they've got to really level up their income. Some clients, it might mean something drastic, like selling the home they're in. Like we're just trying to figure out what those things are, those levers we need to pull. And it takes time to figure it out. But we've been doing this now for over 7 years. We know how to figure it out at this point.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm always curious, basically, how you help people with behavior change, right? Like this, we think about this all the time here, right? Like, are there any aspects of community across like an individual financial gym or financial gyms generally, or accountability? Like, talk me through other aspects other than just that one-on-one, if they exist.
Yeah, we do have our gyms are communities, and we have online community as well. I think the biggest thing for breaking through the behavioral side of it is understanding that money is emotional. And that's what our trainers get trained on, to understand that it's not just dollars and cents. There's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. I always say getting physically healthy and getting financially healthy are both really simple. They just are two things. To get physically healthy, we need to work out more and eat less. And to get financially healthy, we need to make more and spend less. You know, it's really easy, both two things. But if it was that simple, where are all the skinny millionaires? You know, we say like, where are the skinny millionaires at? We don't have a lot of them because there's so much emotion on all sides of getting healthy that factor into that. So we do have to work on the behaviors. For money, the biggest issue that we see that we have to overcome with our clients are the two largest emotions that people are feeling around their finances, and their fear and shame. That, you know, I'm afraid I'm never going to retire. I'm afraid I'll never pay off my student loan debt. I'm afraid I'm going to retire and eat cat food. Or I'm ashamed that I have debt. I'm ashamed that I haven't saved for retirement. I'm ashamed that I'm borrowing from my parents. Those are two highly charged emotions. And those are the two words we hear all the time in the gym. So if we can start breaking those down and help people drop fear and shame and these heavy emotions they have around money, because I always say they're just numbers. You know, our finances are just numbers. They don't define us. They don't define who we are. If we can let that go, then we could start to break through and, you know, embrace what we look like financially, embrace how we're, you know, moving forward and what we're going to accomplish.
So we've been able to give our audience some insight into this current chapter of, you know, what you're throwing every, your skill set, your background, your passion, your commitment to. But I don't think we can probably fully appreciate what this coaching service offers without actually talking about the true inspiration for it. And I know that your background is in finance. Can you tell us a little bit more about your own personal money story and where you found yourself when you decided to start this?
Yeah. So I graduated from college 20 years ago, and I used to tell people all the time, I'm not changing the world. I'm just making money. I knew in college I wanted to make money. I was a business major because I knew I would make money. I started a job with Bank of America in 2000 on a trading floor, making money. And that was my goal in life. And I was really good at it. And I did that for the next 8 years. And then I hit 30. And I remember turning 30 and had all these friends freaking out about turning 30 because they weren't married. They didn't have kids. They didn't hit all these checklists, you know, that they thought they should have. And I remember telling my then husband, now ex-husband, I would say spoiler alert, that 30 is going to be super easier for me because, you know, we're married, we've got a kid, we got this great house, I have this great job. All the things that people want, I have. So it's going to be really great. And then I hit 30 and a half and had a complete meltdown. And I was miserable. I was like, I don't want the house. I don't want the husband. I don't want the kid. Like, I signed up for somebody else's life and I did it really well. And now I don't know where I am. And I got life coached around that time. And one of the first questions my life coach asked me was about my purpose in life. And I remember thinking, I don't even know what that means, because like my purpose has always been making money and I've done that. But it started me on this, triggered me on this trajectory that truly changed my life. And I read this book about happiness, and that was my first aha moment to building the gym, because it was 400 pages of a lot of woo-woo, essentially. But at the end of the book, it said to have long-term sustainable happiness is to help other people and not expect anything in return. And that was an aha to me. That sounded like something I wanted to do. And at the time, I was working for a hedge fund, and Bank of America had just merged with Merrill Lynch, and my former group was asking me to come back. And I thought, I don't really want to go back to that. But I thought, you know, there's a lot of really unhappy people, because this is now in 2009. There's a lot of really unhappy people in B of A Merrill. I was like, maybe this is like leading me to my next thing. And so went back there, and that job, I was working with Merrill Lynch financial advisors. And around this time now, I'm thinking I need a financial advisor, because we're about to buy a house. I have the kid, you know, all the things you feel like you need a financial advisor for. And I remember thinking it's going to be so easy to find my person because I'm working with the advisors. It's like you get to interview them. They don't even know it. And in the process of looking for an advisor for myself, I became woke to the advisory space. You know, no offense to you too, but I'm like, it's just a lot of old white guys, you know? And I was like, this just feels like a lot of the same. And it just felt really unfair. And I thought, you know, if somebody wants something different, they can't find it. So I thought, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. So I became a Merrill advisor. I was the only female in my new hire class of 25 advisors. And I was doing really well. To work with me, you had to have $250,000 in assets. And at this point now, I didn't think anything of it. I'd been around money. I worked on trading floors. Like I was in that lifestyle. So I thought that's going to be really easy. And I laugh now thinking that about how the gym would never exist if I took the advice of my Merrill quote mentor, who said to me early on, he's like, pre-screen all your calls. Make sure people have money before you even meet with them because they literally won't even count as a client if they don't have the money. So don't even get coffee with somebody. And I remember thinking in my head, like, I have plenty of time. I can have coffee with whoever I want to have coffee with. And one of my first, what would become, I call my pro bono clients. One of my first meetings was this woman who said, I want a financial planner. And she was a friend of a friend. And I said, great. And we got on a call and she's like, it was like a movie. She's like, I have $250,000 of student loan debt.
It's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, and I make $50,000 a year doing discovery work. Like not the six-figure law job my law school told me I would have. And she said, you know, and I just feel unlovable. Like who would want to marry me with all this debt? And I remember thinking in my head, like, I don't know. Like that's a lot to ask of somebody. That's a lot of debt. And I remember thinking, I can't do a Merrill. Like I can't even use our wealth management tool to help this poor woman. She's going to feel depressed. So I did this plan for her on the side. And then I ended up just doing a number of plans like this on the side for people because it became like this dirty little secret that I was helping people with no money, but I was becoming the worst financial advisor ever because I loved my pro bono clients more than the high net worth clients. And I did that for a few months and then had the final aha to the gym. And it was literally a week of my life that it started with a quarterly review with a couple. They had $1.3 million with me and we were going over their money and their portfolio was down 3%. And they were just kind of complaining about where their money was. Like, oh my God, the world was ending. Like kids can't go to college. Like, how are they going to live? All these things. And I remember thinking in my head, like, these are not real problems. And I spent an hour of my life making them feel better about being a little less rich. And it was just really soul sucking. And I thought, I guess this is my job as an advisor. And then 2 days later, I did a plan for a woman very similar to like what we do at the gym, just bulleting out what she needed to do. Here's how much you need to save. Here's how you deal with the credit cards. Here's what you do with the student loan debt. And at the end of the meeting, she paused. She looked me in the eye and she said, you know, you're saving my life, right? And I was like, oh, this feels so much better than that meeting. And it literally hit me like a lightning bolt. I was like, I have to create a business for people like this, which I was learning is the majority of Americans. And I have to create a business that's going to take care of people no matter what they look like financially. Because I always say that, you know, the financial services industry, it's just a misnomer that they're called the financial services industry. Because really the only way they can make money on you is by selling you a product, whether it's a bank account or credit card or a mortgage or life insurance. It should be called the financial products industry. But I saw a need for a service. And that was when the time I was on my weight loss journey. And I remember thinking, like, where do I send these pro bono clients to? Like, where's the place to go? Like, you know, I can't help them at Merrill, but where could they go? And I remember thinking, if you'd want to get physically or financially healthy, you go to a financial gym. And I was like, I have to create a financial gym. And it literally all came to me. I was like, it's like H&R Block, but fun and cool. And advisors are trainers and they wear jeans and t-shirts. And it's just like a regular gym. You pay a monthly membership fee and it doesn't matter, just like a regular gym, what you look like financially. You could have $0 in the bank or $8 million in the bank. You just get the workout you need. And that was 7 years ago. And I crack up all the time. 7 years ago, it's been a very long journey, but I saw it very clearly 7 years ago about what it was going to be.
Wow, Shannon, there is a whole lot there. I have been furiously writing down questions. So first, I want to start with the most obvious one, which is maybe very selfish, but what was the book? That book sounds life-changing.
Brad, she said it was 400 pages of woo-woo. That's what you heard?
I want to read it.
It's called Happiness by Matthew Ricard. He's a Buddhist monk. And my life coach at the time was a Buddhist, and it was a lot for me at first. But there were so many pearls of wisdom in it. And I've recommended it to a number of people. I still have it and reread it. That a lot of stuff underlined. I think it's great.
That's awesome. All right. It's going on my list. So you talked about this kind of this life-changing awakening at 30 and a half. And I think so many people have these kind of moments, and sometimes they move forward positively and sometimes it wrecks their lives. And I'd love for you to go back to that moment for just a little bit and talk us through, like, with the benefit of hindsight, what would you tell that Shannon, that 30 and a half year old Shannon now, or, you know, similar people in that situation?
Yeah. The advice I give to people when I get asked this question is I tell 30 and a half year old Shannon to do exactly everything the same, because we're all on a journey and we're supposed to make every step we make. And there are some that are more painful than others. And maybe you wish you could have avoided that turn or that trip and fall, but every single one I've learned from and every single one informed the next. So I would do everything exactly the same. And the point that I make to people too, especially as I mentor younger people, men and women, about, you know, potentially entrepreneurship or businesses or whatever, is to really trust that inner voice and your gut that's kind of leading you in a direction, and to have patience for the direction. So at 30 and a half, I had a realization I was unhappy. I didn't have the idea for the financial gym until I was 35. And then I'm 42 now. And, you know, the gym's starting to grow to look more like that idea that I had 7 years ago. So not everything is going to be instantaneous, and not every journey is a sprint. You know, it's a process. And I feel like I wouldn't change a single thing. There's a lot of painful points of the journey along the way. Like I said, I'm now divorced, and certainly we've been through a lot as a company, but I have learned from every single one, and every single pain point in my life or challenging point has informed me in the next time around and just added to the whole point of the journey. So I do everything exactly the same.
You know, it's interesting. I've been reading this book. It's really been sitting with me, Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke. And in that book, she's talking about how quick we are to recognize anything good that happens to us is our skill, and anything bad that happens to us is just bad luck, and just write it off, as opposed to saying, is there something, you know, from the bad things that I can learn from? Is there something that I could take with me going forward? If you just attribute it to luck, you're unlikely to lean into it and see if there's something to learn from. What I wanted to actually get your thoughts on was, we have a lot of people in our community that have an idea of some sort and are trying to figure out how to go from an idea to action. And your idea was a really big idea. I'm going to disrupt, or actually create from scratch, the financial coaching services that can scale significantly outside of just me one-on-one booking additional hours. And I have this feeling that many people out there have an idea, you know, maybe not in the same niche, maybe not coaching, but have an idea and would love to start working towards it being something. I'm wondering, from you having the idea, what got you thinking about it as a scalable business, as opposed to, all right, I was working with someone from Merrill Lynch, maybe I could be working by someone on my own, and then I could just charge like an hourly rate. What would that hourly, you know, there's all these individual inflection points. Is this a business that I operate and work in? Is it a business? Is it just me? You know, talk us through some of those inflection points and how you took your idea out of, you know, this inspired idea to a business plan and then to a reality that we're living in now.
So 7 years ago when I had the aha, I thought it's like H&R Block. And, you know, H&R Block has 5,000 locations. So it's like there's something there, because there's always TurboTax too. So it's like there's something there about people wanting to speak to a human being. Plus, I knew at Merrill Lynch, we had plenty of clients coming in to speak to advisors. And I was like, there's more people with less money that I'm sure would like to talk to somebody. The financial institutions just haven't given them the person to talk to. And so I always knew it was bigger. So I left Merrill to start building it. And I thought, I'm going to raise money right away. Like, this is H&R Block. H&R Block's a $5 billion business. Like, this is the next thing. So I'm going to raise money. But I got feedback. I always, you know, talk to, I have some confidants and mentors that I talk to. I said, here's the idea. What do you think? I'm going to raise money. They were like, look, prove that the model works. You know, prove that people pay you to help them with their finances before you raise money. Like, bootstrap it and figure it out. And that was the advice I got. So that's the advice I took. And I remember, you know, kind of getting some concepts out there. I knew I was going to call it the financial gym, but it was just me. And I was like, it seems silly to call just me the financial gym. So I created this entity I called Next Gen Financial. And that was my tester way. And they tell people the next 2 years were the dark years because I was going through everything I own personally to support the house and the family and the things like that and charging people not a lot of money to work with me. I was trying to figure out how much people would pay. What does financial training look like? What kind of results can I get? All of those things. How do I find people? And my first client started with me. It's going to be October of this year. And she was in a book club with my sister. And, you know, I had in my mind it was going to be a 1 year program, you know, pay $500 for the year and, you know, whatever, we meet four times and that's it. And at the time she thought that was too much money. And I was like, well, that's what it is. So sorry. And then I was not getting any more clients. And I remember thinking to myself, like, why is that what it is? Like, I'm the boss. Like, I could create anything. Like, why did I just say no? And then I created what I call the Kickstarter plan. And I went back to her. I was like, hey, look, I've got this plan that we can do. I've charged $250. I'll do a financial plan for you. And then I'll check in with you in a year. And she was like, that sounds good. So she did the Kickstarter. Then she told her book club, and client number two started as a Kickstarter. She's like, I could do $250. And then client number three was client number two's boyfriend. And he was like, I need more handholding. So I'm going to sign up for the $500 plan. And funnily enough, I just had a quarterly review with client number one. It's been 7 years now. And I just had a quarterly review with clients two and three who are now married with their first and trying for their second child. And they've been with me 7 years. Clients two and three, their net worth is up $900,000 in the 7 years we've worked together. And client one, she's up $200,000+ on her own. So yeah, there was something there. So it's funny, you know, just trying to figure out what it was. And then I got to a year with all of them. And I remember thinking it's a year and like, bye, have a nice life, you know. And we got to a year and they saw the results, you know, that of somebody kind of pushing them and can keep pushing them to do more. And they were like, well, we could still keep working together, right? And I was like, oh yeah, we could keep working together. And then did that. But I was blogging at the time and doing other things. And I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I'll just be like Susie Orman. Maybe I'll just be a personality. Like maybe it won't be the gym thing. I was, you know, just, again, trying to figure out the direction. But every time I thought about something else, those clients would come back to me. Like I'd get a text saying, hey, my credit score just went up 60 points or hey, can you help me? Like, we just got engaged. Like, all these things would happen. It was like my signs, like I always say, like the breadcrumbs along the way that kept pulling me back. You know, or if you watch The Godfather, it's like they keep pulling me back in, like the mafia. Yeah, they kept pulling me back in. Every time I thought about
leaving.
Thank
you for giving me the opportunity to give that test run. Appreciate that.
240 episodes, you finally get your chance.
Literally what I heard in my head every time I would get a text or an email, I was like, I just want to leave. They did. Because I was going through everything and I was like, I got to go back and make six figures again. Like, this is silly. Like I'm, you know, and my family didn't know what I was doing. They thought Shannon's lost her mind. She had this great career at Merrill Lynch and now she's helping people with no money. Like, what's going on? And then I got to literally, I went through everything. I had a 401k when I started. It was over, or IRA, it was over $250,000. And I remember taking the last money out of that and feeling like I had nothing left. And I went to my then husband and I was like, look, I'm literally worth nothing. So this has been fun, but like, I should go back and make money again. And he was like, no, but you're really onto something. Because now I'd had like 2 years of results with some of these people and I was getting some people and he's like, I have some money left in my IRA. Like, let's just keep going. And about a month later, I had coffee with a former boss of mine. And I was telling about what I was doing and updating him on all these stories and the results I was getting. And he was just let go from Merrill Lynch. And he said, what do you think I should do with this severance payout I got? And I was like, I think you should invest in a small financial services company that's about to run out of money. And that was my first $100,000 check. And that was in March of 2015 and 2 years in. And that's when I put the gym concept out there because that was the first real money I had. And I was like, all right, this is the sign. I'm going to make the push and let's put the gym. I rebranded, I put the gym concept out. And what's funny is when you see some of my clients, you'll see start dates from 7 years ago. So 2013, that's when I left. And then you'll see a number have started. I'm on a lot of 5-year reviews now with people because 2015 was when I put the gym concept out there. Like, so people didn't really know what Next Gen Financial was. It was just like kind of my small tester project. But once I put the financial gym concept out there and started going on more podcasts and talking about it like a gym, people got the gym analogy. And so I had a number of people join after that.
Yeah, it's got to be wild to think back, right, to these pro bono clients, the one who said, you know, you're saving my life, right? And then to see those first three clients who, it sounds like between the three of them, spent $1,000, and across the three of them, their net worth is now up $1.1 million over 7 years. Yeah. That is truly incredible. And I guess, you know, I'm curious about how much of this is now tied to the physical location. Obviously, you're in very expensive cities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the benefit of the physical locations as opposed to just doing this via phone or Skype or Zoom or whatever it may be? I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I always envisioned that it was going to be a physical location. And we do work with virtually with clients. We do both. And we work with clients in all 50 states. So we're able to do that. But I saw something transformative in being someplace. And going back to the health analogies, you think about, and this is, I, you know, kind of saw some of these things in the CrossFit model and SoulCycle. I was like, people go to a CrossFit gym, although now, you know, with the CEO, I'm not sure how many people are going there. But, you know, people go there and they're motivated by the other people and the people they're working with. And people go to SoulCycle classes for the experience of being with, around a group. And those gyms and those physical health environments just create community around a shared goal, which is getting physically healthy. I wanted to create community with a shared goal of getting financially healthy. Imagine if we created this space that people were talking about money. We always say the gym, money is the ultimate taboo topic. You know, we are more comfortable talking about sex with people than money. And what is transformative in the journey and the process is having this safe place where you can talk about money and without judgment and without fear and shame. And you know, other people are doing it as well. And we've seen that in our spaces. So where we can still get the same results virtually with somebody. I mean, I have a Peloton bike, so I believe in the model of both, but we can get the same results. There is something special that happens in the gym community as well.
This is really interesting. So you're helping people with money. You're bootstrapping this, which I'm a huge believer in. Keep it light, keep it lean, get a process. You know, don't invest tons of money in something that you have no idea if someone wants or will buy.
Yeah.
So you're proving that concept out, but obviously it sounds like your burn rate, you are still going through your reserves at this point. And now you're given this, you know, this check, $100,000, and you're basically handed this mission right along with that. All right, go make something out of this. Like, I believe in you. You've sold your vision. Go make something out of this. And I believe part of that is you're making, this is about scale. You're making your first hire. You're potentially investing in a physical location. You're at this point, you've been given the freedom to say, all right, it's not just going to be me anymore. It's going to be me plus a small team. But that implies that your entire business is built around the trust and the direct level of care that you are given to another human being. And now you're bringing another dynamic, another person into this. Talk us through that inflection point.
Yeah. It's so funny you asked the question like that because yes, I was getting all these results. I'm like, there's something here. This has to be something bigger. And I did have many times where I thought I could just have my own business. Like, why am I worried about raising more money or hiring another person? Like, I could just have, you know, 200 clients, charge them whatever, and that's a nice income. But I knew I was building something that had to be available to more people. And I knew that there was a process that I could teach and train, that I wasn't unique as I am. I wasn't that unique. And it needed to be available for more people. And that was always how I felt. So I got that 100,000. I started to build up more clients for me. And I was like, well, I can't keep taking all these clients. You know, there has to be other people. And I wanted to raise more money to hire a person to pay for another trainer. And I had a number of meetings with investors and some large companies now that are interesting, you know, looking at us again. But back then, like, okay, well, this is great, all the results you have, but you're great and you can't replicate you. So that was the feedback I got. And my response was always, I'm looking for somebody with compassion and empathy. I could teach anybody about finances. When I became a Merrill advisor, I didn't know what an ETF was. Okay. That was part of my shame. I mean, I knew about, worked on a trading floor. I didn't know what an ETF was. I learned about it in my training program at Merrill, and Merrill and Morgan Stanley and UBS, they're popping out advisors all the time with training programs. And it's not necessarily quality. I said, I know what I can train and who I can make into a trainer. And the skill set I need is not something that's hard to find. And I don't have the market on compassion and empathy. I'm sure I can find other people. And there was pushback. So I couldn't figure out how to get to the next level. I went back to that first investor and pretty much told him, like, I can't find other investors. I need this next $200,000 to do a place. So I was in a WeWork then, and I was like, I could see the value of even being in the WeWork. I was like, I think we need our own space. I found the trainer I wanted to hire, Bridget. She's employee number one. I was like, I found the person, want to hire her. Here's what I need. And he gave me the second $200,000 and I hired Bridget. And now I have 47 trainers at this point. And we have a training program that we've done. We call it Trainer Academy. We've done it now 8 times. We've done it virtually. And we have an 84% success rate with our training program versus 10% with the traditional advisor program. So I knew I could teach people. I knew I could find the people, and we are. And we get comments and positive feedback all the time from almost every single one of our trainers. And I love when I see that. I love when I get emails from clients who say, you know, that they love Bridget, they love Joy, they love London, they love all my trainers. And I think back to that meeting and those meetings with the people who said I could never replicate me, because I have replicated me, but a better version of me, because they're all different and unique in their own ways, as they should be, my trainers.
Shannon, I'm curious. So, you know, we're talking about finding people, right? Like, that is such a difficult task. And I'm certain there are many, many thousands of entrepreneurs, business owners listening to this podcast who they're hearing you, right? Like, skills you can learn on the job. But like, I'm curious, how do you screen for compassion and empathy? How do you find those people who are willing to put in the effort, who have the ability to learn? Like, what can you tell that business owner out there listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I've seen or read or heard things, your vibe attracts your tribe. And I think, you know, it's putting those things out there, that's the kind of business you want to create. And those are the type of people you're looking for. Because truthfully, they end up finding us. Bridget, I met through a circle of friends. We have a number of employees who started out as clients, or they've started out as podcast listeners of mine because they've heard me and they're like, they buy into the mission. We're definitely a mission-driven business. And I tell people all the time, I can't imagine if I was building a business of like cogs and units, because I don't know how I'd motivate people as much. But because we have such a strong mission, and, you know, I talked about that woman saying I'm changing her life, my trainers hear that a lot and on a regular basis from their clients. And that's something that's highly inspiring and keeps them motivated, you know, to work and want to be here. You know, it's putting it out there. And as far as like the interview process or looking, I think it's interesting because the type of people we're getting and the type of people who want to come to us are people who maybe they thought about being a financial advisor, they thought about being a financial planner, but they didn't want to have to sell a product. They didn't want to have to do things the other way. And they've seen or heard us. Funny thing is that, like, once we started doing Instagram ads about 2 years ago, a number of our employees have come to us. They've seen an ad from us because maybe they Googled financial trainer or, so I think that's a funny, we've joked about it, my marketing head and I, that Instagram and Facebook ads have helped us find clients, but they've also helped us find employees because they've gotten ads. Like, we have a number of employees say, and then I got an ad from you guys. I thought that was a sign. So at first it was, they were finding us and they still find us. We actually have a wait list of people who want to work for us. And then we've now since refined our process of hiring more. We do a Gallup strengths test too. I think personality testing, I think, is really important for building a business. Now, in hindsight, that's one of those things learn the hard way, because there's a lot of nice people out there, but maybe they don't have the skill set or the strengths to the type of job you want to put them in. And we've had a lot of success with testing and then multiple rounds of interviews at this point. And then the other thing that we've developed from an HR perspective that I think is critical for anybody who is building a business that is going to have more than 2 or 3 employees is creating your core values. And I heard core values when I worked at Bank of America, and they were just kind of BS. You know, it wasn't really anything I really connected with. But having really strong core values that are what you tell your team, that what you live as a team, it's what connects everybody. We have fired people because they haven't, you know, lived our core values. And we've used in when we had challenges in the team, we bring up our core values. It's part of like the review process for trainers and employees. Like, are they living the core values? And that kind of keeps this cohesion and this specialness in the company that starts from the hire date. We talk about core values now.
People are listening to this and they want that to be their story, that 2 years from now, they've added $200,000 to their net worth, that over the last 7 years, they are on their path to become a millionaire. But right now it feels really far away. There's the fear, there's the shame. I'm negative $250,000 in student loan debt. I don't have anybody in my social circle that can give me good qualified advice on this.
and they're hearing your story and they're saying, that's what I've been looking for. I need a financial trainer. Why don't you go ahead and just tell our audience a little bit more about the program and where they can, you know, how they could get started if they're interested.
Yeah. So we have people who've started with us and say that, you know, I have negative dollars. We've had people start with negative dollars in the bank with us because they have bank overdraft fees and have come out of it. And I always say everything you do financially is fixable. So wherever you are, however you're feeling, just feel highly confident that everything's fixable. Because over the last 7 years, we've literally fixed every situation you can imagine. I don't care how bad you think your situation is. We've seen it all. So everything's fixable. And we have a special going on, but on average, our clients pay about $70 to $80 a month, like a regular gym to us. And if people are saying, I don't know how I can afford that, because I've heard that in the past, I always say, if $70 or $80 a month is going to break your life and break your bank, then you need to join our gym, because no one should live a life where $70 to $80 is stressful, because then that means you're not planning for the next things and bigger things and greater things in life. So if that's how you're feeling, then maybe you really do need somebody to look in your finances and give you a third party perspective. But the other thing too is that we also have a 6-month money back guarantee. So 6 months is when we really see significant change with clients going through like the behaviors and making longer term changes. That's why we want people to do it for 6 months. But if your net worth hasn't increased with us more than what you've paid us in 6 months, we will pay you back. And we've had that for 2 years now, that money back guarantee, and we've never had to pay it out.
Because, never is a very absolute term. You're saying no one has ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now we've returned some people are unhappy, like they maybe wasn't a good trainer fit. Like we always say, we're not going to let you, and we want it to feel like a really good investment for you. We've had a few performance issues from some trainers, not a lot though, but we've never had to pay on the money back guarantee. Cause interestingly, part of our money back guarantee is like, you have to do the work too. That's the thing we always say. Like, you know, it's like a regular trainer going to the gym. It's like, we're going to tell you how to do the right exercises, how to do the sit-ups and the burpees or whatever, but you got to actually do them. Like getting financially healthy is going to take work. So that's the thing we really want to implore people is like, you know, we're not miracle workers on our own. Like you're going to have to do some work too. But if you do the work, you show up at the meeting, you do half of what the trainer says, you are going to be further along. So we've had people think that they should get it back. And we're like, did you show up at a meeting? Did you set up the emergency fund? You know, and they didn't do anything. And it's like, well, okay.
So if someone brings the energy and the commitment, you bring the tactics, the strategy, and the motivation.
You're going to get the results. Our average client in 3 months, our average client increases their net worth by $2,500, the average. Our average client increases their credit score within 3 months by 60 points. And our average client negotiates more than a $5,000 a year income increase within the first 3 months of working with us. So our performance, 6%, we always say we're the last ones to get you financially unhealthy. Like we're committed to the process. For 7 years, we've built this secret sauce. We know how to do it. We just need you to be right.
There's a reason you found us last, because after you start working with us, you don't need to find anyone else. Yeah.
Yeah, we're done. You got it.
I got you. All right, so that sounds great. How can someone find you? Where do they go?
Yeah, financialgym.com is where they could go. You start out, we encourage people to sign up for a free call to learn more. What I love about our free call systems, you're going to talk to a current client. It's a side hustle for our clients, helps them, you know, make more money, and it helps us tell the story. They're not incented to sell you on anything. So it's really a light, easy conversation. Then they're going to find out how we can work with you, pair you with a trainer that's going to help you get the most results and successful results you can. And then you get paired for your first session with a trainer. And that's either in person, it will be in person starting the first week of July in our locations, or virtually as well. We still work with clients virtually. So onlinefinancialgym.com. We also have a podcast, the Financially Naked podcast, where you can learn more about our team and our clients at the Financial Gym. And we're on Instagram at the Financial Gym, and lots of content and great resources on our sites.
Shannon, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thanks guys.
I loved having a conversation about the intersection of fitness and finance. I think the metaphors are abundant. I also think that once you give yourself permission to do better in one aspect, it makes it so much easier to do better in others. And regardless of which one you chose first, whether it was your health or whether or not it was your financial picture, just the fact that you got started tells you, you can do this. If you got value from today's episode, press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. Just lets the provider know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.